It's muted.
Hello and welcome to the SenesBank Financial Year 2016 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question-and-answer session. Please note that this call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present CEO Peter Amangbo. Please begin your meeting.
Good afternoon, and let me welcome you all to the 2016 Group Results Presentation for SenesBank. I want to thank you all for dialing in, and I want to go straight to the presentation. But before then, I would like to introduce my colleagues here with me. I have Ebenezer Onyango, Deputy Managing Director. I have Shola Oladipo, Executive Director. I have Stanley Amuchie, our Chief Financial Officer, and Felix Egbuor, our Chief Risk Officer. So welcome once again, and just let's go straight to page five of the presentation, where we have the Nigerian economy and key developments in the banking sector. No doubt, 2016 has been a very challenging year for the Nigerian economy as a whole. GDP growth declined to 2.24% year-on-year in Q3 2016. Headline inflation increased to 18.6% year-on-year for December 2016. Oil production and price remained low, though we've seen the trend change in recent times. Our foreign reserves increased from $24.5 billion recorded in September 2016 to $25.8 billion in December 2016. But the good news is that as of today, we are talking of about $30 billion. We'll go on to page six. We have highlights of CBN circulars and directives, the key ones in 2016, and I'm sure you are quite familiar with what we have. But it's important to say that the central bank are taking quite some measures to ensure that liquidity in the interbank market and foreign exchange supply is improved in the economy. Our investment proposition, we remain a dominant player in the Nigerian banking industry. We've recorded improved and increased share of the middle market and the retail market, strong focus on risk management, very robust dividend payouts. We are paying out 2 naira 2 kobo for 2016. Our credit rating and certification remain very, very strong, and the extension of the group's brand. I want to hand over now to our Chief Financial Officer, Stanley, to take us through the group results. Stanley, please.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. We'll go to slide 9 on the financial highlights. We continue to show efficiency and risk management for superior performance, and as a bank, we have also continued to build the shockproof balance sheet. We have our gross earnings growing by 17.5% year-on-year to 508 billion. We also have our net interest margin growing by about 7% year-on-year to 240 billion. Non-interest income was up 45.9% to 123 billion, and we have profit before tax growing 25% year-on-year to 156.7 billion. Profit after tax also was up 23% year-on-year to 130 billion. Gross loans and advances was up 16.2% year-to-date to 2.4 trillion. We have total assets going up 4.7 trillion, an increase of 18.3% year-to-date. Also, customer deposits was up 16.6% year-to-date to 3 trillion. And our total shareholders' funds went up 18.5% year-to-date to 704.5 billion. Loan-to-deposit ratio was 67.8%. We have our liquidity ratio well above the required minimum. We have it coming in at 59.6%. NPL ratio was at 3%. We have capital adequacy at 23%. Cost-to-income ratio came down from about 57% to 52.7%, underscoring our continuous effort on cost management. Also, our ROE was 20% for the year ended 2016. So if we go to the next slide, slide 10, and that shows our profit and loss statement. And what it shows is that on the core lines of growth, we have seen a lot of growth on both interest income and PBT, underscoring that the bank grew its income from the core earnings of the profit and loss account. Slide 9 also shows a trend of our net interest margin and our cost income ratio. We've seen our net interest margin decline year-on-year by 8.6%, from about 8.1% in 2015 to 7.4% in 2016. And this was as a result of increasing cost of funding. And this was clearly on the back of attractive earnings on treasury bills. So you see customers demanding higher earnings on their deposits. Aside that, we also see our borrowed funds start to increase because of the exchange rate differences. We see some costs coming in from there. So that contributed really to the impact on net interest margin. Cost to income ratio also declined by 8.4% year on year, from 57.2% in 2015 to 52.4% in 2016. We are still committed and will continue to push down costs, notwithstanding the inflationary pressures in the market. We'll continue to see every way to push down the cost here. Then PBT also increased by 24.8% year on year from about 125.6 billion in 2015 to 156.7 billion in 2016. While BHA, as I mentioned earlier, was also up 23% to 130 billion from 106 billion. If you go to slide 12, that shows our interest income, a breakdown of interest income and non-interest income. And you will see our interest income growing 10%, majorly from government bonds and treasury bills, and also loans and advances. We see a drop in interbank placements because most times it's just a decision of which one pays better to put the funds at any point in time. Non-interest income was also up 46% from about 4.8 billion in 2015 to 123.4 in 2016. On slide 13, it shows also a breakdown of our interest expense and total operating expenses. And we have interest expense going up by 17%, as earlier mentioned. It's driven mostly by our savings accounts, which although grew in volume, we also had increase because of statutory required to increase the rate based on MPR. We also have borrowed funds, the increase coming from there, as I mentioned earlier, had to do with the exchange rate impact. On operating expenses, we're able to maintain a moderate growth of 4%, notwithstanding the inflationary pressure in the market. So we were able to manage most of the costs that were within control. Mostly the major increase came from AMCON charge and the NDIC premium, which were a function of our size and deposit growth. To go to slide 14, that shows our balance sheet. Assets basically shows a strong liquid balance sheet with continued growth led by our loans and security portfolios. Those were the areas we saw growth coming in the year. Slide 15 also shows our balance sheet liability and equity. And we can see that our assets are well funded from our strong deposit base, which means we remain well capitalized, providing a buffer for further growth in the future. Okay, we've shown also currency breakdown on slide 16, showing on both loans and deposits in the different currencies. That's also shown here, the breakdown and the position. Then slide 17 shows our loan growth, our deposit growth, and mix. We've seen our loan grow from about 2 trillion to 2.3 trillion in the 2016, and also our deposit went from about 2.5 to almost 3 trillion in 2016. Also, it shows also a breakdown of the mix of our deposits, demand deposits, and domicile accounts. Also showing from a growth in domicile accounts, although demand deposits dropped a little bit, but we also see savings also growing in 2016 compared to 2015. Go to slide 18. Slide 18 shows a breakdown of our liquid assets and funding mix. We can see our liquid assets grew from about 1.2 trillion to 1.5 trillion, a 17% growth between 2015 and 2016. And also our funded mix, we saw a growth of about 17% as well, from about 3.7 to 4.4. The next slide talks about the P&L broken down by geography. It also shows that Nigeria still contributes a larger portion of our revenue, about 90%, and in 2016, about the same amount, 91% in 2015. So it's just around the same figure. Slide 20 also shows our P&L by sector, and also shows our gross revenue coming largely from large corporates, about 54.8%, while small and medium corporates contributed about 28.6% in 2016. On slide 21, we have our loans and deposits broken down by sector. We have a breakdown of the gross loans in 2016, made up largely by large corporates that contributed about 67.3%. Small and medium corporates and retail was 19.7%, while public sector contributed 13%. In deposits, we have large corporates 55.5%, small and medium 38.8%, and public sector 5.7%. On our risk management, we have continued to show a lot of resilience in management of our risk assets. Our NPL coverage is shown on slide 23. We have a coverage of 100% in 2016. We've seen our NPL ratio going up to 3%, largely because of our prudent stance on power sector and oil and gas. We have had to make some take some prudent stance to make some provision on certain power sector loans, reflecting what the industry is now and the issues that they've had with tariffs in the industry. So we took that decision. So you will see that uptick in power sector when you see the breakdown of NPL. Slide 24 shows our loans by sector in 2016. Still remains well diversified loan portfolio and supports our asset quality. On slide 25, this gives a breakdown of our NPL, and as I mentioned earlier, you will see that the major growth is coming from power sector and oil and gas, where you see some uptake compared to 2016. And as I said, it was because of the prudent stance that the bank took on some power sector loans, particularly. Slide 26 also shows our liquidity and capital adequacy. We still remain very liquid, well above the required minimum of 30%. Our liquidity is about 60%, and our capital adequacy is well above the 15% required of force added. Our capital needs to remain strong, predominantly Tier 1 core capital. So at this point, I will hand over to the MDCO to talk about the strategy and the driving of our vision.
Thank you very much, Stanley, for your presentation. I mean, I'll just say what is really the outlook and how do we plan to navigate in 2017. Let me start by saying that we've started 2017 on a positive note, and we expect that we will continue to do well. If you look at slide 28, we have strategies for driving our vision. We'll continue to compete and very aggressively for market share with strong focus on high quality assets and top-end relationships while adopting cost reduction strategies. We'll continue to deliver superior service experience to all our clients and customers, develop solutions for each segment of our customer base, and also improve on our trading management. Retail will continue to expand our retail base, and we know that with this, our income will further be diversified. We'll drive profitability where we have competitive advantage in the different identified growth sectors, infrastructure, manufacturing, retail, service industry, telecoms, transportation, and general commerce. Outlook and prospects for 2017. Retail will continue to grow, and there's no doubt that we'll take advantage of the opportunities in the retail market to grow our liability base. Agri and other food processing opportunities, we expect to take advantage of the various schemes introduced by the central bank, including the CAC, that's the Commercial Agri Credit Scheme, the National, and other initiatives by the CBN and the government to grow our agri base, while ensuring that our risk management is not compromised. Our drive for low costs and appropriate mix of deposits will still take preeminence in 2016. Investment in technology and product innovation will continue to do this, and with that, we'll expect that our customer service will even be taken to greater heights. So I want to thank you all for your time, for your listening, and we'll now go to the Q&A. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. We'll have a brief pause while questions are being registered. Once again, that was 01 on your telephone keypad to ask a question. The first question comes from the line of Ola Uwansanya from RenCap. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I have a number of questions. So firstly, I'm trying to understand what the rationale behind seeking to raise $100 billion capital, given how healthy your capital ratios are today. So in the absence of any strong loan growth, is this a signal to indicate that you're positioning ahead of a devaluation or further deterioration in the quality of the loan book? And secondly, if you could just clarify what type of capital it is that you intend to raise. I see also that you're seeking to increase your authorized share capital, and that seems to suggest to me that there could be a Tier 1 element. So I guess my question now is, why will you raise Tier 1 in this environment, and especially considering the fact that most of your capital now is Tier 1 capital? And finally, on the capital point, at what point did management decide to raise capital? Because you've been speaking to investors for, you know, the past 1 year, and I think for most part of it, the feedback has been there will be no capital raise in the near term. So what triggered this decision? And I guess I'll ask the rest of my questions once I get clarity on these ones.
Okay, thank you very much for your question. I can see that all your questions are based on capital raise. And let me clarify, and I want to assure you that we are not approaching the Nigerian stock market to raise any capital now. What you've seen Zenit Bank increase authorized share capital. And yes, you might be looking at in future. We don't want to be in any position where we'll just be on edge. We always like to have the flexibility. If we did decide to approach the market at any time soon, then that's not when we want to start rushing to say that we want to increase our capital and all that. Yes, we are looking at certain activities at some point, but we are not approaching the local market to say we want to raise any capital. By the time we are ready to move for any of these corporate action, we will definitely let our investors know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. And also a follow-up question to the NPL growth in the power sector. Could you please give us some more clarity on what issues these customers are facing? And finally, at what rate is the central bank selling dollars that they've recently made available to retail customers to the banks? And what sort of spread are the banks making on this transaction? Thank you.
I think specifically on the power sector, I can tell you that we all are aware of the challenges that they are facing. And principal of this has to do with the tariff. The multi-year tariff order 2 is currently not being implemented. And this in itself has led to shortfall in their revenue. What we've basically done is more of a precautionary measure, and we are trying to be very, very prudent. So should there be any deterioration in their revenue base, then we will have no cause to panic. What we have done, we could see that the power sector provision increased by about 45% or to 45%. It's mainly a precautionary measure. It is not for any specific customer for us to say, oh, this customer, they now have this challenge. No. It is more based on the industry itself. We have two of the distribution assets that we finance, and that's why we felt that we needed to make that provision. Central Bank, they've been selling FX at, I think the rate is not, the rate varies. It depends on when they intervene. So it depends on what you are talking about, which of these particular timing you are looking at. But I think the rate is still within the band that CBN have been trading or selling their foreign exchange over time, and depending on at what time they intervene. But know that even now, banks are required to submit their own rate. So it's not central bank, there's something like central bank rate. It depends on the rate that the banks are submitting. I think that's what central bank is willing to sell to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question. I'm talking about the dollars available for sale to PTA, BTA, and Medical. What rate is the central bank selling those dollars to the banks? And I understand the banks have a 20%. They can sell not above 20% of that rate. So if you could please just give us an indication of what rate the central bank is selling.
We are allowed to take a commission of 50 kobo. That's what we allow. Central bank sells to us at 374, and we sell at 50 kobo above that particular rate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Muyiwa Oni from SBG Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation and congratulations on your results. I have a few questions for you. The first is more or less following on asset quality, and it's on your oil and gas exposure. So I know you've made additional provisions, and I just wanted to understand the rationale for the 17% increase in upstream oil and gas exposure. So currently it's up to 365 billion naira, and that happened just within Q3 and Q4. So just trying to figure out what's your view and outlook on that sector, given the increased provisions you've made. And then secondly, on asset quality as well, your AAA to A rated loans have declined materially, down to 34% of your loans from 54% in 2015. So I wanted to understand what sectors they are seeing you've had to downgrade. So what sectors they are seeing weakness, and also the impact or how it impacts your earnings outlook going forward. And then thirdly, on IFRS 9, I know Central Bank expects banks to move to IFRS 9 by early next year. I wanted to know what impacts or how you expect that to impact your impairments going forward. And then on foreign currency borrowing, so there was a revised circular recently. I wanted to understand what your views was on the impact on borrowings going forward. So even though it's increased the proportion of foreign currency borrowings to shareholders' funds, but it seems to have brought in some more stringent measures on borrowings. I wanted to understand how that is impacting your interactions with foreign banks. And those are my questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Muyiwa. On the asset quality, the question you ask on oil and gas impairment, yes, we recognize that the sector is in recovery mode, as it were, given the fact that the price of crude, we've seen a bit of sustained rally in the for the first 3 months. But what we've done is that in line with the concept of prudence, we felt that we needed to increase the collective impairment so that we will not be taken unawares in the event that we have any shortfall. So it's not related to specific assets or specific obligor. It's just for us to just be conservative in terms of how we are recognizing the fact that there could be some deterioration. So over time, as the situation improves, we expect that we should be able to see some level of improvement regarding the NPL for the oil and gas sector.
Thank you very much, Ebenezer. Finally, IFRS 9.
Okay, on IFRS 9, the major impact will be on two areas, classification and impairment. On classification, we early adopted IFRS 9, on classification. So we have either trading or held to maturity in our books today. Then on the impairment, that's one area that all the banks, including Zenith Bank, were still trying to work with consultants to look at the impact of the expected loss method, which we're moving from incurred loss that's currently we use today. So the modeling is taking place. We're looking at the impact that we have. What do you see everybody is trying to get?
Can I ask a follow-on on the oil and gas before you go on to foreign currency borrowing? I wanted to know what's driven the increase in loan growth to that sector in Q4.
Okay, the increase in that is basically the translation effect of the devaluation. Recall that we have a number of assets, risk assets we created in dollars. So when you look at the translation effect, before now it was at 200, at 305. That will lead to an incremental of, in terms of valuation, by about almost 50%. So that's
what I was looking at was just Q3 to Q4. So as at Q3, the currency had already moved, I'd assume. So the Q4 increase, I wouldn't have thought it was a currency-related increase.
You know what you are looking at for current, you are looking at year-on-year. Year-on-year, you will see,
okay,
you'll be comparing exchange rate of probably 200 against exchange rate of current 305. So if you look at it, it will not look like when you play it against that Q3 performance, you look as if there's a disparity. No, it's still the same translation effect.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
Okay,
and then the question on the foreign currency point.
Okay, yeah, so as I was saying, the major issue for all of us in the industry on IFRS 9 is the impairment model. That's going from incurred loss now to expected loss. So what everybody's doing is just to model to see the impact that will have. We're trying to get softwares to help to do that. What the CBN has said is that as we do the model, we need to be reporting and the set of groups to be looking at that. What the impact is going to be. As I'm not, nobody can say for sure how that will impact, but as we see the models and see how it plays out, it will become clearer what impact that will have. But as the name implies, the expected loss, there are a lot that will go into it, and it could increase the impairment numbers. That's very possible, but until that is concluded, we probably will not know.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Next question, please.
The next question comes from the line of Tolu Elamitiu from Exotics. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, and thanks again for the presentation. I just have two quick questions, please. The first is on FX liquidity and funding. What can we expect to see from Zenith Bank in terms of new bonds or new loans this year? There's been some speculation about a potential syndicated loan, but if you could give us more info on that, I think it would be appreciated. And a second question is about targets for this year. Can the bank maybe share with us its currency forecast for 2017 and maybe some targets for NPLs and for profitability? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. In terms of new bonds in 2017, I can assure you that we don't have any plan for any new bonds. What we have outstanding is our Eurobond 2019. It's our syndicated loan in dollars. We paid it off 100% December 2016. So we don't have any other syndicated loan outstanding. In terms of 2016, do we have any such plans? I think if the need arises for us to raise all those transactional money, definitely we will do that. That's our normal bread and butter anyway. So we have very good relationships with our partners, and if the need arises, we'll definitely approach the market to raise such a transaction loans. Thank you.
And thank you. And any targets, please, for this year?
What are the targets for exchange rate? Well, we'll continue to watch and let's see what the market is doing. I mean, we are just an intermediary, really, come to think of it. And it's an area we look at with very keen interest. So let's see, there are so many forecasts in the market, and we'll continue to model all our parameters, and we'll see how things go. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you able to please share any other targets for NPL ratios or profitability, please?
You see, I think the way things are in terms of profitability, we will expect that we will continue to strive very hard to perform very well. But I'll tell you, in terms of guidance, looking at all these parameters, we will definitely let you guys know at some point. I will paste this on our website.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
next question comes from the line of Bumia Shaoli from SBN Quest. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation and taking my questions. I've got three questions. First one is on your general commerce book, which now accounts for much less than the 20% plus that it was in 2015. It looks like the reduction in the percentage is not just because oil and gas has gone up on the back of FX translations. I think in Naira terms, that book is down 100 billion Naira year on year. So is that because you're not rolling over maturing loans, or are there any write-offs in there as well? So that's the first one. The second question, I think at the start you made a comment about cost of funds being slightly up because you didn't want to you were just managing things better essentially. But I noticed that your loan book didn't grow, but your deposits in Q4 jumped. Were you just chasing fixed income opportunities, or I'm still a bit confused as to why your deposits grew that much in Q4. And then finally, the comment on the power sector loans. I understand what you said about provisions being put aside, but the classification also showed that your NPLs in power jumped a lot. What is the coverage ratio on those power loans that you classify as NPLs? Thanks.
Okay, I think, go ahead.
Okay, for the general commerce loan book, from what you just said, in terms of absolute sum, the figure has come down. That reflects the mood in the market, given the current foreign exchange scarcity. As long as the supply of foreign exchange is improved, you begin to see that this portfolio will be on the rise again.
Okay, thank you very much. On the issue of the power loan, I think that actually what we've said is we needed to be very cautious and to be conservative. And that's why we have to take certain positions in the power sector to reflect the shortfall in their revenue. I think that's the point that I was actually making, that there is definitely a shortfall in their revenue as a result of non-implementation of the tariff. And that's why we have to take it's just a prudent measure. I think that's really the point here.
Okay, but what's the coverage ratio there for those ones you've taken
provisions on? Okay, the coverage for the power sector. You see, what we are doing, we are looking at purely a precautionary measure. So if we look at the coverage for power, you will not see 100%, I can assure you. It's something around that 60% thereabouts, 50-60%.
Okay.
And that's basically just to reflect that, look, we need to start to build buffers in our balance sheet so that we don't want any surprises.
Okay, that's clear. And how about the question on the cost of funds? The deposits going up a lot in Q4.
Okay, now, you know, historically, you will notice that in the last quarter of every year, we said deposits will normally grow. So this is not out of place. If you check all the last quarters of each of the years, you'll see that level of growth because that's the time everyone is closing the year. Most of our customers, we want to even support those who manage their accounts by leaving some of their deposits. And activities will be low. So most customers will leave most of their deposits and be on holiday. So you always see those levels of growth. It's not an extraordinary kind of growth that we saw.
Okay. I mean, is it likely that a reversal of that in Q1 will lead to some slight improvement in your cost of funds?
Not really. I mean, even it's a continuum for us. You know, we're not going to relax that, okay, we've passed 1 year. Then it's a continuous process that the kind of business we're into. So what could happen, we'll continue to take deposits provided that at a good rate, and if the opportunity presents itself where we see where to put it and make good profit from it, why not? We may still see growth in our deposits even going into the next quarter.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Next question, please.
The next question comes from the line of Ronak Gadia from Exotix. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for the presentation and taking my questions. I'll just go back briefly to the capital question. You made it very clear that this is just a cautionary step that you're taking and you might not raise capital in the short term. But the question, again, as the previous caller asked, is why the need to raise Tier 1 capital? Clearly, you can raise a lot of Tier 2 capital on your balance sheet, and it's not the right time to raise Tier 1 capital given that your shares are trading below book value. So can you just share some thinking on that? And the second question is on your NPLs. Can you just share with us what percentage of your oil and gas loans are restructured, and just in total, what percentage of your loans are restructured? And then the third question is to do with your non-interest income. We saw some pretty strong growth in FX trading and FX revaluation gains. Can you just elaborate whether that would be sustained in 2017? And sorry, just one last one. On your OPEX growth, what's your OPEX growth outlook given in, the current inflation levels? Thanks.
Well, I didn't get, we didn't get that, the last question.
What's the OPEX growth outlook for this year, given inflation is close to 20%?
Okay, I think let me just take the question on the capital. You see, you are suggesting that we should, well, we're not looking at Tier 2 capital as against Tier 1 capital. If you are to check our balance sheet in terms in that of dollar liquidity, we are extremely very liquid in terms of dollar liquidity. We don't even need a Tier 2 capital at this time. No, definitely we don't. And I've mentioned that if we are going to approach the market, we'll definitely let you know. I will definitely take decisions that will enhance shareholders' value. So I don't think we should conclude that, oh, we are going for an equity raise. I think that's the point I was making. The fact that you've said, look, I'm increasing my authorized does not necessarily mean that you want to jump into the market. It's still all about timing and when it is needed. On the FX revaluation, you're asking that can it be sustained? Unfortunately, it is not even in our own hands. It depends on what the currency is doing at that particular point in time. So it's whatever it is at that particular point in time, we'll move on. But we're not actually relying on any revaluation gain as a major P&L point for our own performance. We look at our core business. What are we making from our core business? You also asked on the oil and gas restructured loan. I think that
yes. Oil and gas upstream is important to say that in terms of total portfolio, the loan book is about 15.5%. And you asked the question, what proportion of the oil and gas restructured loan to the total loan book? About 50 to 60% of this was restructured, and the restructuring actually is to extend the tenor. And so relative to the total loan book, we'll say about 6% of it is restructured.
Thank you very much.
Can I just, a couple of follow-up questions? I mean, with regards to the restructured loans, what's the performance of these loans been since they were restructured? And the second question, I mean, like you said, the revaluation gain really depends on how the currency performs. But my understanding was the revaluation gains or the FX gains on your P&L weren't really driven by the currency movements because you closed your net dollar position in the first half of last year. Rather, the gains were driven by derivative gains, which was driven by your treasury department. So that's what I wanted to know, how sustainable that is.
Okay, for the oil and gas loan, the restructured loans are outperforming. Interest and principal service are up to date.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the derivative gain on the FX?
Yeah, we are still pushing to be able to make more on those derivative gains. We are looking at it as a very good source of income even in 2017. So we can say it's one area we'll continue to push for to make more income in 2017.
Okay. And I'm sorry, my question on OPEX, I don't think you answered on that.
Okay, for OPEX, really, our focus is to make sure that we keep bringing it down. You know, you will notice that the major contributors to OPEX, you will see staff costs, you will see things like depreciation. And depreciation most times will come from when you have a lot of expansion of branches and all that. So we are very mindful of that. You probably won't see a lot of that happening, the brick and mortar kind of branches that will bring the additional cost. We're also looking at in every way where we can cut down costs. We are doing that. So within the inflationary environment, we are doing a lot to make sure that we bring costs at a direct level. So we grew 4% this year, so anything within that range of 4, 5, 6% is still what we're targeting for 2017.
Okay. Sorry, if I can just sneak in one last one. As far as capital is concerned, if the currency was to devalue to 400, what would that do to your capital adequacy ratio as it stands?
We've got scenarios way above 400, we will still be fine at 400.
And I'm sure you've seen what our capital adequacy is now. It's out of this world. We're talking about 21%. So even at 400, I don't think, I mean, we're just moving by about 23%. it will not have any significant impact on our capital adequacy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question comes to the line of Nudubisi OBK from Sambik IBTC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have two questions, and they have to do with the new NPLs you took on your power sector, oil and gas. So, first of all, I want to know the contribution of these two sectors to the 10 billion impairment in Q4. That's one. I also want to know that if these impairments you took on these facilities are full, or if we should expect new such cautionary impairments or classifications in 2017.
Okay, I think we're talking of precautionary measures. If the sector deteriorates, whether it's the power, whether it's the oil and gas, we'll continue to provide buffers. I think that's the prudent thing to do. So there is not.
Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for the interruption. Please stand by while we reconnect the speaker line. Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize again for the interruption. We now have the speaker line back in the room. Please go ahead. Speaker line, you are now live. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure what you heard last, but the summary is depending on the situation in those sectors, not necessarily specific obligations, we will continue to take precautionary measures. If there's any need for us to take further provision, we will do that. I'm quite aggressive when it comes to provisioning. If you look at our coverage ratio, it's 100%. So we are extremely very cautious, but I can tell you that it has nothing to do with any specific customer. It is more of the particular sector we are talking about, both oil and gas and the power sector. And as I said earlier, even in the power sector, you will find out that oil prices have gone up. Most of our customers that we funded, their production too has improved tremendously. So we expect that in the oil and gas sector, we might not even have any need to take any further pressure. But if there is need for us to do that, we will definitely do that.
Yeah, how about the second question on the oil and gas loans? Is it upstream or downstream, the new impairments in Q4?
What was the question on that in Q4?
I wanted to know the contribution of oil and gas and power loans to the total impairment in Q4 for 10 billion. Also, if you could break down the oil and gas impairments and NPLs into the upstream and downstream.
You know, what we keep there is basically collective impairment. So because it's a collective impairment, you are looking at a portfolio issue generally. So we place emphasis on those sectors that we think are seriously impacted by the current headwinds in the environment.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
The next question comes from the line of Yai Kai Gavasa from Investec. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Yokai from Investec. Thanks for taking time to take our questions. My first question relates to your regional book. Can you provide a bit of color on the currency profile of your regional book? What proportion of this book is in hard currency? I just want to gauge the sustainability of your other comprehensive income line, which came in quite chunky in 2016. I think it equated to almost 20 to 29% of your PAT. So if you can just give me a profile on that as well, that's my first question. The second question, I think it has been partly answered, which is to do with the foreign currency borrowings, new guidelines from the CBN on foreign currency borrowings and forex debt, which now has to have a tenure less than 5 years. How does that impact your forex funding strategy? I'm also mainly interested on your thoughts around the 2019 euro bond, which does not meet the new criteria from the CBN. I'm not sure if you have done sensitivities around any potential refinancing of that Eurobond. What sort of yield pretty much would it yield, assuming that it was going to come back as a sub-debt? If you can also give me some sensitivities around that. And the next question on power, I think it has been partly answered, but I still don't understand why, even though you have increased the coverage ratio on the power sector, why you're still comfortable with a sub-optimum coverage ratio of 56%. And I think the same applies as well for general commerce. I see the coverage ratio is somewhat sub-optimum again at around 26-8%. If you can explain why you're comfortable with those level of coverage. My last question would be on expenses, which is the OPEX line in the fourth quarter. I realized that there was a significant decline in other expenses, which were down, I think, from 18 billion to around 8.7 billion in the fourth quarter. Can you explain what drove this? That will be it for now.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the first one, before we talk about the regional business, on the foreign currency borrowing, I will assure you that the CBN policy will not impact on our ability to raise foreign currency deposits, or if you call it borrowing, because we have very good record with our partners. And in terms of our shareholders' funds, we are talking of about above 700 billion. So we don't have, and we don't expect to have any challenges in that regard. On our 2019 Eurobond.
Sorry, if I may catch you there a bit. Sorry, you said what is the proportion of hard currency exposure on that book? You threw in a number there, but I didn't quite get it.
No, I didn't talk about proportion. What was the question you raised now?
Yeah, because that was the question that I asked. The question was, if I'm going to split the foreign currency exposure at the group level, I wanted to understand what proportion of the hard currency, by hard currency I'm implying US dollars, euros and pounds, what proportion of that hard currency exposure on the asset side is actually sitting on the regional book? That was my question.
I've not even answered that. That's what I said. Before I spoke on the regional book, I was talking on the foreign currency, but now that you've mentioned that, if you look at the contribution of all our subsidiaries in terms of our revenue, total, including Zenith Bank UK, it's about 9%. The Yearly Bank is about 2.5%, and Ghana, Gambia, Sierra Leone, Ghana is probably the only significant one there. Sierra Leone, Gambia is purely local currency. It's only in Ghana that you will find some foreign currency lending, but the greater proportion is from the head office here. So those ones, if you compare it to what you have in head office, they are not very material.
Okay. So I think just on that question, because the question was around sustainability. I mean, you know, I just want to get a sense of what sort of currency are you exposed to, because if my reading on this line item is correct, the other comprehensive income was predominantly driven by foreign currency translation differences for foreign operations. So my question, so I'm looking at other currencies that you are exposed to, like the CEDI and so on, which, you know, going forward may not fare better when compared to the Naira. So I just wanted to get a sense whether you think that line item would be sustainable in this current environment, given that it was actually quite chunky in the last year, and it actually contributed quite a bit in Tier 2 capital as well.
I think it's in there. Yeah, you're very correct. The key ones you look at is basically the Zenith Bank UK. If you look at Ghana and their currency vis-a-vis the Naira, you will find out that the Naira, you will see this what we have now because of the exchange, the value of the dollar when you compare Naira and Cedi. So that probably accounted for that. Going forward, it still depends on what will the currency situation in Nigeria be compared to Ghana and the UK. I think they are the ones that will probably make that difference. In terms of Zenith Bank UK, they are even reporting in dollars. So depending on what it is, that might actually account for another significant difference, but it depends on what the Naira will do.
So if we see Naira improving, that balance will go down.
Okay.
So I think you asked on the issue of the Eurobond 2019, and I want to say that all what we raised was just $500 million, and was done
we've done quite a lot of sensitivity around it, whether it's going to be, even if it's going to be outright repayment or whether we are going to refinance, I think there is still some time for us to take a decision. Both options are open to us. And in terms of pricing, I think for now, it's still a bit early. We've seen what has been done in the market. We've seen the sovereign coming to the market. So it even helps us to have a very good benchmark and what to compare with. So by as we progress, we'll continue to update our sensitivity analysis. But the good thing is that we have a very good reference now, which is actually the sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about the issue of the and the general commerce, why we are comfortable with coverage less than 100%. Why we have any specific provisioning that this loan is bad? We don't waste time. It's 100% immediately. But if we are saying that it is not ill, we are not talking of ABC power company, this loan is bad. We will do 100%. That is not the situation we have now. I think that's the point we're trying to convey, that it is the current state of the market itself. I don't think we can take 100% position now because we've not seen any particular customer who can say this customer is bad, so we take 100%. It is based on the industry situation, and that's why we try to take that precautionary measure. And that's why you will see about 55-60% for that in power, and even more of even the power than general commerce.
Okay, if I may come in here, because I'm checking your notes here, and on the power sector you actually have a specific impairment to the amount to the tune of 12.3 billion naira. So I don't quite understand when you say it's a collective impairment when there is actually a specific allowance that was actually provided for there.
No. I didn't say collective impairment. Mm-hmm. If you say collective, you're talking of general. What the mm-hmm. point I'm making is, even if you say, if you are going to make a specific provision, you will attach it to mm-hmm. an obligor. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key. That does not actually mean that the loan to that obligor is bad. It's part of, because you must make a, basically what we're trying to do is to say, look, I have this reserve. Even mm-hmm. if two of them happen to be bad, eventually I want to take provision. So I'm talking of that provision, I'm just talking of how do you cover the shortfall. But it's very important that you have a buffer that you can use in that particular sector. I think that's the point I was making. I never used the word collect payment for power.
Okay, because I think the coverage numbers that I was looking at was the collective coverage, which include both collective impairments and specific impairment, which was why I was struggling to get why you're making that distinction on it either being collective or specific when the aggregated collective coverage on the power sector is actually less than 100%.
I think it's just like talking about, let me take this loan as substandard at this point, just in quotes. I think that's really what it means.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
So the last one is on OPEX.
On OPEX, I think what you're saying, that drop is coming from some provisional figures that we'll have to reverse when we assess the level of expenses we're going to incur. So we have some provisions that we had to reverse in the fourth quarter. That's what's called
that. Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Craig Metherall from ADR Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity. I just want to refer back to the presentation you guys sent out at the end of, I think it was October last year, the Q3 presentation. You gave a lot of guidance numbers there. A number of them were actually missed looking at the final year results. So what changed in the last 2 months? Yeah, I'm talking NPL guidance was at 2.5%, and you've reported NPL of 3%. NIM guidance was 8%, and you reported 7.4%. So what did the bank miss in those 2 months that turned against the bank? And then perhaps just in the breakdown of the gross loan book, there's a continual decline in what you classify as collectively impaired. I mean, you've spoken to a large extent about the asset quality issues and the provisions you've raised, but just in terms of classifying your loan book, you're now sitting at 0.5% of your gross loan identified as collectively impaired. So that to me suggests that the environment is improving and your gross loans, you know, that there's not much of an issue in that book. Can you just talk to me behind the methodology of that? And then finally, with regard to staff expenses, We only saw a rise of 2% there, which, just looking at some of the numbers, seems to be largely driven by a decline in staff numbers. I mean, how sustainable is this? Are we going to see more staff layoffs going forward, or will we see a spike in staff expenses given the inflationary pressures? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think let me just say, on the issue of guidance, you talked about our Q3, we have 2.5 for NPL, and net interest margin, we have 8.1. I think it's important to look at the environment itself that we are actually operating. There's no doubt about it. We are in recession, and I don't think there is any doubt that things are getting much tougher on the macro side. From our own side, we will expect that even NPL, when we were given this guidance then, Nigeria was not even in recession. So at the point that we're in recession, we will definitely have to even revise what we have. Unfortunately, we gave this at Q3, and we expect that Q4, chances are that things might not be better. So from 2.5 to 3, honestly, I would say it is not... Yes, you can say we missed the target, but I don't think it's something that you can say was too adverse when you consider the challenges in the macro environment. And the same thing, too, is applicable for the net interest margin. We want about 8.1 for some time, but when you look at the fact that the cost of borrowing went up significantly at some point in that in Q4, and that actually is much more difficult for you to pass on all that by way of interest on your loans. Remember that some companies are already complaining about weak profitability, and increasing your interest on loans aggressively was quite difficult. So based on what we have, yes, we missed those targets, but I don't think we've done too badly. When you consider out of the numerous guidance that we gave, these are just the two. And on the NPL, I think it's important that no matter the guidance you give, it's important that one has to be very prudent when it comes to asset quality. Even in terms of the NIM, if you look at the type of large corporates that we deal with, it's sometimes very difficult for you to pass on that cost. And I think that's really why we had that. You asked some questions on staff costs and all that, right?
Yeah.
Can you
Okay, you are talking about sustaining the numbers on the staff cost, if it was just coming from the number of staff who are going down and all that, how we can sustain that. Well, it's a little bit difficult because when it seems like staff cost, it looks rigid downward. What could happen? What you are seeing that you don't have a lot of reviews. As people leave, what we are trying to do is to move people around within the organization. So some people who are in different jobs will create opportunities for people to move from one particular job to another to fill up any need in any kind of a level or any kind of experience that is required within the bank. So sustaining the level of numbers of staff at the level where it is, we are not employing more, so you won't see an uptake on the numbers that could bring additional costs into the book. So we believe we'll be able to maintain it at this level reasonably, unless we have to do anything in the future.
Okay, thank you. And then just the question around the proportion of gross loans classified as collectively impaired declining.
So I didn't get that.
The proportion of gross loans you classify as collectively impaired, that has declined since December 2015. You've spoken about a tough macro environment, yet that suggests that things are improving.
Okay, so we'll get back to you on that. We'll just get the details from it.
Okay, all right. One more final question. It is, in a way, linked to the guidance. You gave guidance of 20% loan growth at Q3, yet from Q3 you actually experienced a 5% decline in net loans. I realize that you raised allowances, but even stripping that out and the fact that there was no currency move from September to December suggests that a lot of loans are rolling off and there's no real kind of appetite for any increased lending. Does that suggest that the outlook for 2017 is particularly muted?
Well, I think the key thing is that where we deploy our assets, it depends on what yield are we looking at there. If you look at the yield on treasury bills, it's above 23%, which is almost about the same rate you are going to lend in the market to those AAA names. And if you look at the fact that treasury bill in terms of risk weighting is 0%, so really it's more asset switching among asset class, really. not necessarily that loan growth in 2017 will be very well muted. I would probably say we're probably not going to be too bullish in terms of loan growth, but we'll continue to have our eyes on all the parameters, capital adequacy and yield. I think it's more of a balancing act, really. I think that's what will determine where we deploy our liquidity to.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll send an email through with regards to the other question. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Duet Budu from Oko Bank Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I've got about four questions. The first one is I just need to recap the percentage of portfolio that was restructured. And just annex to that question, is when did this restructuring happen, and most of it, if you can recall, and what stage were they when they were being restructured? Were they past due beyond 90 days, or they were within 30 to 90 days? The second question is the funding. I just wanted to know the nature of domiciliary deposits. Would you classify them as sticky or non-sticky, especially the portfolio that you're holding? And then I have got a question on the off-balance sheet side. How much of the off-balance sheet assets that you brought on board, you transitioned to on balance sheet, if you're able to recall that, if you've got a figure, how much of it moved into on balance sheet?
Okay, thank you very much. Let me answer the. You asked five questions. You said you're going to ask four. Let me take the one on the DOM account. The domiciliary account is essentially foreign currency deposits by our customers. That's really what it is. And you ask whether it is sticky or not sticky. What I'll just say is they are quite consistent, just like a normal current account. From a behavioral perspective, you'll find out that you will expect to have a specific average. I want Ebenezer will talk to us on the percentage of portfolio restructured for oil and gas, which I've mentioned before, but you can probably just reiterate that now.
Okay, thank you very much. Relative to loan book, what we restructured is about 6%, and it's also important to mention that even at the point of restructuring, there was no default in terms of loan service.
Sorry, I don't get the figure. What is the percentage? I think
about 6% of total loan book.
Okay, 6%, fine. Okay.
Then there was no default on any one of them at the point of restructuring. What we did was to capitalize on the forbearance from the central bank that oil and gas portfolios could be restructured because of the depressed price then and tenor elongated, so which was basically what we did. But prior to doing that, interest service, principal repayment for all of them were up to date based on the terms of our offer.
Thank you very much. And you asked when were they restructured. They were done at different times, really.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we just say, yes, restructured is no. It takes quite some time to preparing cash flows and all that. So it takes quite some time to achieve. Then on the off-balance sheet, you asked how much did we transition from off-balance sheet to on. There's no such transition, really. Because really, most of our off-balance sheet, either you have bonds and guarantees, mainly those are what you have there. So there's no transition from off-balance sheet to on.
The reason why I'm asking that question is because, especially in Q1, when the devaluation happened, there must have been some off-balance sheet contracts that were priced at the previous peg, and then the devaluation happened, then you could not reprice them upward. Did you experience something like that in Q1?
No, we didn't.
If you look at most of our foreign currency obligations, they are on balance sheet.
I understand that. But what I'm asking is you commitments, you documentary commitments, documentary credit commitments that you had opened.
Okay, confirmation lines. Okay,
yes, that you had opened. I'm referring to the ones that opened before the devaluation happened, and they were pegged at 290 at the previous peg. And then the devaluation happened, and then you find that you had to reprice them upwards, or you probably you're unable to reprice them. That's what I'm asking.
You know, I think what you do, there are basically unconfirmed letters of credit, which you have more like a contingency or contingent liability. The way it works is that by the time the customer is ready, remember that if you are carrying them in dollars, once there is a devaluation for purpose of your balance sheet, you are going to revalue. But customers will bring enhanced amount of naira to buy those dollars. And once you do that, you extinguish the obligation.
Okay, fine. Again, Just to recap a bit on the restructuring, you're saying that the restructuring was not triggered by non-performance, but then that defeats the purpose of restructuring.
You know, when the restructuring was done, the regulators on their own recognized that the sector was challenged, and we didn't want to wait until we start getting to the time of default. And for our portfolio, we were able to ensure loan service, because from the time the facilities were booked, we had buffers in the reserves account. So the buffers in the reserves account were applied to service the loan. At the time the buffers were drying up and we saw that the CBN forbearance was there, the natural thing for us to do is, instead of you allowing the default, is to capitalize on it and begin the restructuring. And all this happened at different times for different obligors.
You mean to capitalize on the buffers or the reserves?
Well, the buffer is the same as the reserve. When the facilities were booked, for most of them, we created a debt reserve account, which was primarily to take care of a situation like what we experienced. So because we created it, they came handy, because at that time when revenue was depressed and they couldn't afford the cash flow to service, we had to make use of this reserve to service the loan. Okay, thank you.
Okay, fine.
The next question comes from the line of Olutolaf Uni from WSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good day, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. I have a question on the derivative contract and two questions on the power sector loan book. The question on derivative contracts is, I would like to know the maturity of the derivative contracts you have on your asset portfolio, and two is, as regards the power sector, I would like to know if there has been any particular restructuring on any of the assets in your power sector portfolio, and I want to know what the coverage ratio on the power sector is. Thank you.
So what is the derivative contract you're talking about? Are you talking of specifically for power sector?
No. I'm talking about the currency, the forward and futures contracts you have on your books.
So you're asking for the nature?
The maturity.
Oh, the maturity profile. Okay.
Yeah.
On the issue of the power sector, the coverage, I know we've repeated that severally. Now what we have is a 65%. So that's really what we have for the power sector. On the issue of the restructuring is still ongoing.
Yeah.
What we have in the power, I think basically for two of the power assets that we finance. It's not as if we have even too many of those assets. I'm not sure we have more than three or four.
Three.
So two of them were already in discussion, and purely because of revenue shortfall.
Yeah.
The shortfall we're talking of is probably something in the region of 30-40% in terms of the revenue shortfall, which will definitely necessitate restructure. But we are being a bit careful, because the only singular item here is the tariff. If the tariff is adjusted to reflect the current exchange rate and inflation rate, it changes everything. So that's why we are still in discussion to ensure that we don't unnecessarily elongate the loan and leave too much cash flow in the hands of the company when things change. But we are definitely looking at that.
Okay.
And maybe to add to that, maybe why the situation of the bank is slightly different from what you see in the industry is the fact that the assets that were funded were like the best in the market. I mean, if you look at the discos that were funded, these are the best of the pack. You know, and even with the problem of illiquidity in the market, the problem is not is not the same as you see in other locations.
Okay.
And for the maturity profile of the derivative contracts, I think they are all within 1 year. There's none extending beyond 1 year.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Do we have any further questions?
We have a follow-up question from the line of Ola Vonsanya from RenCap. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my follow-up question. I think it's still on capital, because I'm struggling to understand the rationale behind this proposed capital raise. So please correct me if I'm wrong, but Peter mentioned that you won't be going to the Nigerian market, you wouldn't be issuing a Eurobond. So how exactly do you plan to raise this capital? And what's the timing of the capital raise? And how do you intend to deploy the funds? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You know, I've mentioned to you that we have not even said we are going to raise capital. All what we have said is we are increasing our authorized capital. There's nothing wrong with that. And that does not necessarily mean that you are going to the market. But I was just telling you emphatically that we will not approach the local market for any capital raise. We are not planning any euro bond. I'm mentioning emphatically on those specifics. All what you are saying is we are seeking approval, because you don't do your AGM all the time. If there's need for any corporate action, you have, instead of you going to start calling an EGM and spending another money, and I still have it there. Whether you do it this year, whether it's next year, whether it's 3 years' time, of course, you have that buffer. You don't want to operate on edge. That is the point that I made. So talking about what is it going to be used for and all that, I think that's jumping the gun, really, because you must even start before you start counting. You must start the race before you start counting the number of kilometers you've covered. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So, The next question comes in line of Weah Ukun Ringboye from ARM. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
All right. Thank you. I think quite a number of my questions have been addressed. I think I'll just go to what your guidance. What do you see in terms of loan growth over 2017? Very strong or very weak, as adjusted for currency? If you adjust for any currency moves, so where's your view for loan? What do you think in terms of loan growth? Then secondly, what's your thinking on monetary policy over 2017? How are you viewing monetary policy in terms of where do you see tightening remaining intact over the rest of the year, or do you see rates coming down at some point? And lastly, on the derivative contracts, what's the size of the derivative contracts you have in dollars? And lastly, if you sensitize the currency if you sensitize your NPLs for Naira movement, where do you see your NPL ratio coming? So assuming Naira goes to, say, 400 Naira, what does that do to your NPLs? That'll be all.
Okay, thank you very much. Loan growth 2017. I mentioned it before. We don't expect loan growth to be quite much. And you have alluded to the tightening in monetary policy. If it continues, I don't think you will expect much in terms of loan growth. Outlook for 2017, so the monetary tightening continue. Maybe it depends on the FX regime and what the central bank themselves want to pursue. So I think that really is a bit subjective at this time. On our derivative contract, the figures are actually in our financial, really. What we have there, you can use an estimate in terms of the exchange rate, and it will give you the dollar. Thank you very much. So I think if we don't have any further questions, I'll want to use this opportunity to thank you for your time, for dialing in, and for all the questions that you've answered. So I want to thank you all and assure you that as a bank, as the management, will continue to work very, very hard to ensure that we render good customer service. I want to thank all our customers for their unflinching support in these tough times, and more importantly also our staff for their hard work, dedication, and loyalty. So thank you all for your time, and have a very good day. Thank you.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.